that of the Honorable Mr. Neal, who has been assigned as our lead for this hearing. Honorable Mr. Neal, sir.
Thank you, Dr. White. Good morning, everyone. This is here on board of January 20th fee. We're going to be conducting a program for Woodland Health Agency number 32976. We have full complement of board members this morning, and they are the Honorable Mike Johnson, the Honorable Dan Rittenhouse, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who is our board chairman. We can also, my name is David Neal, and I will be the hearing lead today. Okay, so clarification, Mr. Charles, you don't have to respond. When we talk to you, I'll address you by your first and last name. When referring to Mr. Huff, I'll be talking about William, okay? Everybody?
Okay.
Okay. So, Mr. Huff. Okay. I'm going to be going over some information on your case, and if I go on, if you hear something that sounds incorrect, please let me know. If you have trouble hearing anybody talking, please let us know. There's some kind of telephonic connections we want to desire then. So I'm going to go over some information here, including a little bit of information about their original offenses, and then we'll start discussing the last few months of your last hearing, okay?
Okay, I appreciate it.
Okay. So you're 67 years old and you're serving a life sentence for murder, which began on June 29th, 1967. You have been before the board 73 times since you were reimpart or your incarceration. Now the sentencing information aims will not tell me what these sentences would have been, but according to the parole information, that you were paroled to a next consecutive sentence on February 25th, 1982, and May 2nd, 2005, you were again granted a parole to a next consecutive sentence. And like I said, I don't know what those sentences were, but at this time it looks like the only thing on the state of Arizona is working on is the one life sentence. On December 2015, you were granted a point rest, and you were actually released on January 4, 2016. Since then, you've been in front of the board a few times, and you are continuing on point rest. And that's what you're at today, on point rest, hoping for a original for, you know, more than 2 years, more than 3 years. And so we need to discuss what's been going on since you were released. Now, from what I gather, you face some challenges with employment, but apparently overall you have vision to release, and you know, I'm afraid, well, I know recently there was a problem with COVID, and apparently you were going to work because they wanted to break you on full time. You were working through a temporary agency, but in that process, they ran a background check, and they weren't happy with it, so they not only wouldn't take you on full time, but they released you from working at Target at that time. Is that correct, sir?
Yes.
And have you found employment since that happened?
Yeah, right now I'm in the process of looking at I got to do 2 interviews next week and 1 week after next. And so one of them looked real promising, and maybe the other one might be as well. But three of them things I'm looking to. Both of them are like warehouse chemists of what I've been doing, and I hope they can get the job at school kind of place. And also in the third time I'm taking college courses like FDA classes, I'm going to take my EL class again, trying to get my doctorate, possibly become a truck driver. And this is the thing that I'm getting involved with. Hopefully I can become involved within the next minister.
Okay. Well, we'll have to get your CDL, we'll have to well, there's a lot of routes throughout the state or even in the city, so it's, yeah, I didn't think there's a lot of routes being out of the world, but you don't. I've got 2 sons in my trucks, and they never leave the state with them.
Uh-huh.
Okay, now I also see that you're behind in your fees to the tune of about $450.
Yeah.
Now, has that been a continuing issue since you reached on home arrest, or is that recently because of the employment?
Well, that happened because when I became initially released from parole, I didn't have service, and I started, I wanted to get Social Security, but what I do is what I do is explain that to my feelings, but I mean, I do get money, I'm going to be more than half of it, I mean, 200 at a time, that way I get it all, probably get it all together.
Okay. All right, so why don't you, let's see, the last term was January 18th of this year.
Yeah.
So the over 6 months has gone by. So what's happened in the last 6 months? Of we understand the situation in Target you're looking for. Other than that, your community involvement, family, all of those kind of things, what's happened in the last 6 months that is
the last 6 months, I think we've been pursuing, staying in contact with my field, so I just have to make sure that I'm staying out of my program here. And like other than family relationship, other than that. But I want to find out if I haven't time to explain before that as the early in April the 6th of this year, I got an accident. I've been involved with a real game crash, and a car hit me from behind. And I knocked me off my screen, and I went unconscious, and I ended up suffering from injury. I didn't want to tell my family this because I know my sister, you know, she's suffering from her daughter's loss and that school day. I didn't want them to know anything that happened to me. But I didn't do the hospital, but I went home and made the next step. So I was trying to, you know, get me up and confess. It was a low thought actually in the mind, and the guy hit me, I guess it's not really pretty, so it's even when it really seems to be pretty, I'm just trying to get myself back to
this. Okay, I'm trying to figure out my phone.
Yes, Mr. Neal, is something out there coming out on this, because I feel like there's a separate discussion going on, right?
Mr. Charles, huh?
Yes.
Is your phone on mute?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Well, I hear you now, but when the brother was talking, there was some background noise coming in. It sounded like a muffled conversation.
No, I was telling my wife, I'm in the car right now, telling my wife I gotta make a turn here. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut in here.
but yeah, it makes it really difficult to hear whoever I'm talking when we get that kind of interference. So, thank you.
Oh, okay. No problem, I apologize.
Okay, back to really enough.
Yes.
I get too many names in front of me about who's on the phone. It said in the report that you were doing physical therapy to get some soft tissue injuries when you got hit.
Yes, sir.
Did it damage your scooter?
My scooter was fully destroyed and it caught on fire. All I remember is when I got hit, I backed out, and when I woke up, everything was just on fire. The car that hit me had total damage to the front end. And I ended up getting a whip back to my neck, so they were concerned about my neck. And then I had a concussion. And so I went to work, I went to work and trying to work at the job was difficult, but I couldn't really stand up on my feet. I was having headaches, I was busy. I was riding, so they were concerned about it. So I went to the physical therapy and they informed me that it was just, I had some kind of nerve damage to my neck and to my head when I hit the wheelchair.
Okay. So did the other driver have insurance?
Yes, he did. Yes, he did.
Well, that's good. I mean, because a lot of times I would hope since you were driving real clear that you had insurance on, but what I would say is a lot of times if you get hit by somebody who has a better bed and have insurance, it sometimes is a little harder to get your bill paid in.
Yeah.
But that sounds good. Well, I mean, I understand. I was an accident reconstructionist for quite a few years, and I understand what's going on. But when I was a kid, and you were a kid, they didn't worry about it. You pretty much get run over by a semi, you don't have to worry about whether you're hurt or not. If you're a car, you're not covered, but then you're tough, the car's tough.
Yeah.
But that's not true, so. And if you went up on the road and then once you just make sure you follow the instructions of the medical people, because if you don't do what they tell you, you're going to have some permanent injuries that are permanent damage that will really can be debilitating. So,
yeah.
But I'm very glad that you didn't end up spending any significant time in the hospital, not working around with that girl. So, this is just, it's purely informational, but are you involved with any church or anything, sir?
Well, not right now, and they wanted to take some medical and do a scan on my skull. And so I one thing that I felt at the time, I felt a little busy, and I didn't think it was that serious. So I went to my primary care doctor, and so he did a physical therapy checkup on me. He checked my blood pressure, my heart pressure, and all the rates, and he said, because I'm on dialysis, I keep pressing it for a blood clot. And he was concerned that the impact could have damaged the blood vessel, and I could be bleeding on my brain, which I thought was possible because I had the symptoms of a headache and nausea and all that, and it was like I couldn't really focus on the detail of stuff. And so I went to the physical therapy place, and this lady, she was kind of well informed about these kind of injuries. So she was telling me that I did suffer a concussion. And she said it could have been serious. The only way she said that, I had a helmet on my head at the time to hit the windshield. But the windshield was knocked about a foot inside the car. And she said, because of that impact the way I hit, the helmet saved my life. I couldn't actually get there right now.
Okay, sir. Well, yes, that's good. When the helmet is a good thing. It makes it easier on the accident investigator.
Yeah.
So, what do you think you could do differently, better, whatever, if you were released to go to the pool at this time? How would that improve your life and your ability to we are society successfully, sir.
Well, I gave it a lot of thought over the course of time, and I know that my situation is unlike a lot of other people's situations being out of prison, because I'm always going to be on profile, I'm always going to be on spotlight. So what I have to do first of all is to adjust to that, and then, but I want to pursue it, I want to get married, I'm going to church, I'm going get baptized next month, and you will become a missionary to the church I'm affiliated with. And so the thing I was doing, I just wanted, as I just told you, I'll be 16 years old my next birthday. I just wanted to have enough money saved up, like make a job, save up my money, and try to just live out my life constantly. I don't ever want to look back upon what happened back 16 years or 15 years ago. So that's the plan. I hope that is good, you know, and the numbers never come back to my thing is now, you know, I just want to be with my sister, you know, she's, you know, because I'm like there for a fact that she's with me here, like, you know, so I want to be with her. I want to make sure that she's doing great, you know, I know she's been doing, you know, and I'm just saying, you know, we all suffer, but I think because of her situation that, you know, I suffer a lot, except my family. And, you know, she's giving me to the hospital just next week to have a surgery, so, you know, I want to be with her and make sure that she's something that can be doing, you know, before her experience. But my thing is, you know, like, you know, I want to be doing this, but I'm going to pitch a prophet. I know it's going to be a prophet for me to be accepted back into the community, to earn the trust of the community, you know, and I know, you know, some people that do vote, they already, you know, have that trust, you know, so they haven't had the opportunity to really prove to anybody that, hey, this is a different person, you know, I'm 67 years old. I have one thing on my mind right now is getting married, get my money, and kind of save up, save money. I got my own apartment number that I got furnished. I got a nice girlfriend that I'm trying to tell him I want to marry. You know, so, and then I'm just doing that for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me see if my fellow board members have any questions at this time.
Thank you, sir.
Mr.
Gomez. Thank you, Mr. Newell. Mr. Love, can you hear me clearly? Did you say that you wanted to do missionary work?
Yes, yeah, I do.
What do you mean specifically for your church, or do you mean just the state, or leading the state? What's your plan?
Well, for the church that I'm going to right now, and so basically there, because they're taking the time, they know all about my story, and I did a testimony in front of like about 150 people, and they know my story, they know who I am, and they accepted me as a certain leader when I was baptized, because I already admitted to them that I want to have my life changed, I want to get my life back into God. And so they did it to work with me and came to the missionary classes and came to become a missionary. Basically for them. And if I had any possibility of doing something for the state of Arizona to give it back to the community, I would do that too. I wouldn't mind going back to the church and talk to young guys about their lives and how they can change their lives. And that's what kind of motivates me myself, you know. So those are two things that I look at, you know, all the time.
Thank you, Mr. Hoff.
Thank you, Mr. Lewis. Thank you, Mr. Leon. Mr. Huff, it's not a requirement, but I'm going to ask this question at any rate. Why did you decide not to come to Phoenix to appear in person before this board today, sir?
Well, because of my accident that I had, and I didn't think I was going to have it. It was ridiculous, because my sister, she's got to go to the hospital for her back surgery, and she didn't know whether it was going to be this month or next month, so she didn't tell me coming up there. So I took my field, and she said, you'll be in the office. And I still, for me, I wouldn't mind working, but I still know that the people can't go down to get that, and she didn't like that. You know, those are the two reasons, and
those are
the
other reasons. Okay, sure. May I also ask this, sir? It seems to me that last time you appeared before this board, as well as today, both times you've had some challenges with employment. Do you have any idea how you're going to end up getting some permanent employment in the future, sir?
Yeah, they got second chance jobs in public agency that are going to be hired ex-offenders. And so that's my next step. I'm going to look for that. And then if they take me as an employer, then I'll work for the second chance for the things out here. And they got other places that they do employment fairs, and you know, they hire ex-offenders as well.
So when do you plan to seek that employment, sir? Because, you know, that's one of my concerns. You know, this is twice, you know, during this period when you're coming before this board, we don't have, you know, permanent employment, and I'm just trying to gain some understanding. When do you expect that you might be able to find some permanent employment, sir?
Well, Okay, well, I got, on my itinerary, I can physically see the temporary connection on 8-1, and then I got to take the testing at Holmes Field on Friday at 8-2. And once I take that, check this map that's involving, like, skills and math and kind of all that. And the employment thing is, once you pass it, you want to go to hire you as an employee. We don't have no requirement for, when you have a background check or anything, that they just hire you on condition that you're good. So, I'm probably going to Holmes Field next Friday.
And I'm going to make an assumption, and please correct me if I'm wrong, that at this time you are continuing to reside at the residence of your sister. Am I correct, sir?
No, I'm at my own apartment.
Oh, you have your own apartment?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And how's that working out for you?
That's going to be doing a real time. I'm getting my people up in my list, and I'm keeping it up to speed. I did it along with the landlord, and he's supportive of me, so it's doing good, I guess. And I'm hoping to get a little bit more. Start getting my job, like, start getting on with work. I start getting around town a little bit easier and ride the bicycle all the time.
Okay. Now, you indicated, I believe, that you had a relationship with with possibility of a partner or a mate. How's that going, sir?
That's going good. And we were talking about discussing about getting married. And the plan was to get married next month. But you know, to me, I cannot get married until I get baptized. So I have to wait until the baptism, and then that would have to be around. And so this is August 15th, around October this year.
And the church where you are attending, they have made some stipulation that you cannot get married until you have gone through the baptism services. Am I
right? Yes.
I understand that.
Yes, I think so. According to their religious belief, it's like, you have to do the baptism right with a priest, you have to be separated from a priest. So, because of all the, I guess, the desires of those of the relationship to the man and woman. So, you got to be in that fishing field, and so, that fishing field for me would be 30 days,
How often do you see your fiancé, sir? I use the term fiancé. How often do you see?
I see her every day.
You see her every day?
Yes, sir.
And socially, what do you do? Do you go to movies, I know you go to church, well, I believe you're saying that you go to church. Yes. What else do you do outside of, seeking employment?
We do shopping together. For me, I like to do my exercise. So I go out on my bike ride and I ride a cycle ride. I try to get me 27, 30 miles a day. And I do that, and I go shopping. And I do like a lot of housework. I'm an artist, so I do a lot of drawing at home. So basically, I do my artwork at home, and I draw pictures, and I draw some art.
And have you been able to put any of your artwork on the market? I remember we talked about that, I believe, around the time you were released. So were you able to sell any artwork, or are you just doing that just because you enjoy doing it, sir?
Well, I do it for both. I have sold some of my work, and I'm doing it for the other. I do it for my family. But I have talked to with the manager about possibly set up the merch shop over at this spot meeting where I can sell all my work over there. So we can sort of, things over there, and they'll actually have people come by and be working over there. I got stuff that I can probably sell for $200, too.
You had to accident with your bike. Has it been repaired, or how do you move around these days, sir?
Well, right now, I just got a bicycle. And the scooter got totally destroyed. It burnt up in the fire. And so, the damage to that, it was the damage that I was working through with me, coming up out of this with a bad kid, without seeing any critical injuries. But that could have, but it wasn't something that had to save my life. But, I didn't even pursue the litigation with this guy, because I'm not a vindictive person. The guy that hit me, I just gave him some rights. Look, I didn't call him into anything. I just was set up with what I got out of the whole situation. They gave me $1,000 for the fight. And I did $600 in the legal. That was all I needed. For me to pursue any lawsuit, I just went into that.
Okay, and how are you doing with your fees, sir? Are you paying your fees these days, sir?
Yes, I am. I'm still behind with my fees, but I'm relatively consistent with paying, but I feel every month. And I'm increasing that from what I'm paying now, which is, I think, $65 a month. helping $130 a month. That's what I can kind of catch up with you.
So now you're paying $65, and now you, in the future, you're going to pay $135 or something per month until you catch up.
Yeah.
And you mentioned your sister, that she's going in for surgery. Is that the one that's down in the area where you live? That's the one that's going to the hospital next week or week after next?
Yes, sir. It's here.
Okay. And you also have a sister out of state, am I correct, sir?
Well, she actually moved to Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
She's in Phoenix.
Okay. But in the past, she was out of state, right, in California somewhere?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. But now she's relocated to Phoenix. How often do you see her, sir?
I haven't seen her, but that's what she was doing out there in the union.
Me and Jehovah, I got to talk to her.
That was like June of last year.
Okay, well, that's all I'm going to ask at this time. Thank you so very much, Mr. Huff. I may have some other questions. I'm going to stop at this time.
Thank you, Dr. Wright. Mr. Johnson.
Thank you.
Mr.
Huff, are you getting any psychological counseling at this time, sir?
Well, I went to my federal parole office the other day, and he's going to put together a packet. He's going to recommend me for a month to get the program. He told me it was going to be like a one-on-one therapy class, and he's going to do it through the federal government.
So I know it was a long time ago, and a lot of bad things that said occurred. That's the concern I have.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have attended any psychological counseling or what you've been through? Because as a young kid, those are some very serious emotional things that you did and your reason for it. That's the issue. So since you've been out, have you done any psychological counseling, sir?
Well, I have been through several classes. I have, it's on file here this year, but I have been through a place over in the ministry called Center for Life Skills, and they do just psychological counseling.
So what triggered some of your reactions when, as a kid, you had some of these violent, or as a young man, you had some of these violent reactions.
Mm-hmm.
What triggered those, you know?
Well, I could, you know, typically, so long ago, I could probably speculate saying that, you know, you look on anger issue.
Uh-huh.
And the anger that I had at the 59 years, I couldn't control my anger, and I think that because I'm so young and so immature, that I just look at anger, you know, get out of control.
When did you start?
When was
the last time you had some classes, sir?
I think it's
some counseling.
Okay.
Psychological counseling, sir.
I had a class
with
I would say about 7 months ago.
Uh-huh. And the counseling that the federal parole officer is going to get you into, when is that?
Yeah, well, I went to a place in Florida called the BFS, which is called Behavioral System Southwest. And what they do, they put the program based on psychological counseling, and everybody in there has to go through, I think it was 8 groups, different classes of psychological counseling, one-on-one therapy, group therapy, we have to take anger management, everything. And it was for me, I was there for 3 months or whatever, 3 or 4 months.
And what was the reason for the information that we have that way back when this incident, these two incidents originally occurred, that you got gratification out of that? Is there some personal or emotional gratification that you got out of it?
I don't believe that. I think it was just something crazy that I've done it, and it was something that, to me, you know, at my age, you know, looking back at it, it was something very crazy, but I just didn't take time to think. I was just that more reacting to it with anything, you know, just crazy that year.
Yeah, because, you know, when I read and it was just said that you were just mad, that's the reason you did it. You stopped by the police and was upset. that was your reaction.
Yeah, yeah. That was like, that was part of it, and, you know, because I started back at the, you know, for me, you know, I still started back at the police when I was, you know, I was scared. And as a child, you know, I started back at, you know, it was bigger, you know, the bigger for the first child. So, you know, but for me, like I said, I look at it now, it was just something very crazy, something that I didn't think it out. I didn't process it through a different phase behind it.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You're welcome, sir.
Okay. Mr. Neal, may I? Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Neal. Mr. Huff?
Yes, ma'am.
When was the last time that you got angry and weren't able to control it? When was the last time?
The last time, August was 1984.
And what happened then?
He was involved with a fitting type right there. You know, that was when it was like a bunch of, I knew what it was, I was trying to get out the way of it, right? And so when I got out the way of it, one guy hit me with it, and I got mad about it, but I didn't have anything to do with it. But that was the last time. I haven't had a fight on an officer, I haven't cursed anybody else since 1984.
And you haven't been angry since 1984?
1984, about.
All right, sir, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Okay, if there are no questions from the board at this time, Mr. Huff, I'm going to move to your supporters, and then I believe we have a meeting representative and then your parole officer, okay?
Okay.
All right, so hang in there, and I'll be back in a couple minutes. And let's start with Charles Huff. Are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay, would you like to address the board?
Well, the only thing I can say, I agree, he's my brother. I'm a bit concerned that he's not working, okay? Because I know that I don't answer the devil's workshop. I'm a little concerned about that. And there's a few things that he got to show a little bit more get out there and hustle attitude, but he's not doing that from what I'm hearing, okay? And I don't want him to play back into the hands of idleness and end up getting back in trouble, okay? And then he does seem to be making a lot of progress from what I'm seeing, and particularly on the computer. He has a nice home and everything. The thing that he's not doing is he don't have that job. I know it's kind of hard, but he's got to get out there and at least show an effort. And that's what I'm not seeing. But I love him, and the punishment that he's already had, that you guys gave him, and he's in your hands anyway, is I'm satisfied with that. But as the future, I've seen you guys' hands. I can't really predict what he's going to do down the road. But he has seemed to be making some progress in what he's doing.
Okay, so you live up in the valley here in Phoenix?
Yes, I live here in Phoenix. Mm-hmm.
So how often do you see him?
I haven't seen William. The last time I saw him, I moved him into that apartment that he lives in, where he's living at now, and I kind of laid back out of the way. I wanted to observe, see what how he's come along. Seems to be coming along fine. The accident. I don't know why he's rushing into all that. He should take his time. And I would tell him like this. I'd be focusing more on remorse. You know, I know it's hard to bring back the past, but you got to think like that in order to... But the reason why I'm here is because of something that I did. If that was me, that's what I'd be thinking right now. And wouldn't be focused so much on myself, but focusing on trying to pay back in a remorseful way to the people that you hurt. That's not going to ever go away.
Okay, thank you, sir.
You know. Do you
have any questions from any of the board members? Okay, and I don't believe we were able to get your sister on the phone. We were able to connect with Ms. Bishop or Mr. Johnson?
No, sir.
No, sir. Okay. So, all right. So I think from there then, we'll go to Ms. Timmons. Are you still on that?
Yes,
second here, sorry, I had to take it off of.
Okay, mostly. Like I said, we are teleconference, we have issues occasionally. Okay, since there's no other rep supporters for Mr. Huff at this time, we're going to have him allow you to address the board if you wish. Okay, would anyone want to phone through my talk while somebody's trying to talk with you background noise that we can't hear?
Thank you. I'd like to read the statement that I wrote first, okay? I ask you to please consider the victims in this matter. Darlene Ray and I have been a part of this process now for 10 years or more. Every 6 months, we're dragged back into this arena to either relive the worst moments of our lives, which is in Darlene's case, or to relive the trauma of our families that have suffered for over 50 years. As this process taking place every 6 months, we are held just as much prisoner as the person who committed the crime. We are held captive by our mailboxes, waiting for the letter to let us know that once again, we are being asked to plead for the victim. It's exhausting. It is mentally, emotionally, and spiritually draining. The things that we've been subjected to hearing over the past decade is nauseating. We've heard excuse after excuse from Mr. Huff, ranging from things like, I made a teenage mistake, to racially motivated, to the most recent verbal assault, telling us that we just need to get over it. It's disgusting. There is no grace for the victim. And to add insult to injury, nearly 2 years ago, he was released by a mistake, and now he cannot be held liable for this. In case you've forgotten, like in past parole hearings, let me remind you of the heinousness of the crime. Mr. Huff violently murdered two young girls. Let me repeat that, violently. This was not a crime where he mistakenly killed someone. This was not him driving a car and accidentally caused the death of someone by crashing. No, he targeted two very young girls who could not fight back. He destroyed their trust and ripped away their lives from them just because he wanted to know what it felt like to rip the bowels out of someone, stab them, strangle them, crush their skulls, and attempt to sexually molest them. Not once, but twice. He had over a month in between the crimes to choose not to do it again. He could have chosen to go unsuspected for the rest of his life. Instead, he took my aunt Jamal, a mere 3 weeks, I'm sorry, it was longer than 3 weeks, after murdering Cindy, and then taunted the police. He wanted them to know how terrifying that he felt he was. In his letter, he even dubbed himself the Phantom. He claimed he had found another victim. In the event that you are not aware, the alleged third victim was another little girl of the same age and a similar look. If he had followed through with this crime, you would have had a serial killer on your hands, a violent, unfeeling, unemotional serial killer. At no point during any of the parole hearings has Mr. Huff shown one ounce of emotion. At the last parole hearing, as I stood less than 3 feet away from him, he stared off into the distance, looking for anything more interesting than what he was currently doing. He's not cried, he's not asked for forgiveness, he's not one single time shed a tear. Shouldn't that speak volumes as to what kind of person he is? In your document, there was an interview after his arrest where he said, I tried to make myself feel bad about killing that girl, but I just couldn't. Listen to that again. He couldn't make himself feel bad. He's killed small animals. He's lit fire. He has no emotions. He is the walking, talking poster child of serial killers. The only difference between him and Ted Bundy, or any other serial killer for that matter, is he was caught early. But now he's released. He is in the community. He is able at any point to figure out how to beat the system and go commit more crimes. He may laugh at this and try to make you feel that he is normal. But how on earth can you ever be considered normal after brutally murdering two girls? Watch his body language. And I understand that he's not there today, but I hope that maybe you can reflect on past conversations with us. Watch how unfeeling and unemotional he is. That should be all the answer we need. When confronted by Morgan Rowe from the local CBS station, he was asked if they could discuss what had taken place in 1966. His response was only, you mean what happened to me? He does not believe that there is anything in this about the victim, only about what has happened to him. He has never claimed to be innocent in this crime. He has never said that he didn't do it. So he is not a victim. Please quit treating him like a victim. He claims that he's rehabilitated and he's not a violent man, but look at his victims. They were young, barely older than kindergarten. He was locked into a prison because he was not around small girls, so of course he was still rehabilitated. He was removed from this place. The parole board has made a mistake. He admitted to it. That part is over, and there's nothing more that can be done about it, much to our dismay. But you have the opportunity to do something right by not allowing this person to be released unconditionally into the community. You have also not put stipulations on his parole, so he's allowed to live in communities with children. He's allowed to hold a job with children nearby. He can access computers, cell phones, and all other forms of communication. This is the ultimate form of a tragedy. And then I wrote, and again, he's not present, so he can't do this, but I will read it anyway. Look at him physically. He is not weak. He is not old and hunched over. He is still very much capable of hurting someone. If he kills again, and that is very much a possibility, it is on your hands. If you were to take your child or your grandchild or your niece out in public and saw him somewhere, would you feel safe knowing that he was around? I hope not, because if you can answer yes to that question, you have not read what he is capable of. Be glad this was not your family. Whenever I receive a letter in the mail that it's time again for yet another parole hearing, my hope lies that it is a letter letting me know that he's just passed away, that we will not have to go through this again. Please, as horrible as it is to rewrite time after time after time, please, I beg of you, make it as right as you can by not releasing him unconditionally. Now, I would just like to state as well, I have been taking notes during his comments, and I would like to go over a few things, please. He had stated that in April he was hit by a car, but he didn't inform his family. He claims that he was very close to his family, but I can't understand why he wouldn't mention something like that. Claims that he had a concussion, he's concerned about it with the neural damage. Did you understand and read in your notes, this is to the parole board, that he hit two little girls over the head with a rock, that he bashed in their skull? So the fact that the person who has done something like this is concerned about moral damage is almost laughable. One thing that concerned me is the first parole board member who spoke, and I'm sorry I couldn't say your name. It concerned me that you made the personal statement to say that you are glad he didn't spend time in the hospital. That's offensive. I will just state that for what it is. He claims that he wants to be a missionary for the church he's associated with. A missionary at a church where there are more than likely children. That is so concerning. He also mentioned that he wants to go and have a job interview with Homeboard because they hire without a background check. Why would you... I don't even know what to say about that. He also said that he... when you asked if he was taking any kind of counseling, he mentioned that he had a life coach and counselor for murder. I don't understand how there is a life coach and counselor for murder. He said that he started 7 months ago, but he didn't mention it at his last parole hearing, which was less than 7 months ago. I claim that he only went for 3 to 4 months and made the statement, and I quote, "It's weird that I didn't think much about it or process it, speaking about the crime he committed. And I didn't know that it was okay to start with an anger issue, and that the last time that he got angry was in 1984, that that's his calendar that's carried around. I have personal issues. I will leave it out of this, but I just want to let you know that these victims are not forgotten, and they should not be forgotten about the parole board as well. This is part of your job, is to ensure that the community is safe, and it will not be safe with him out. It doesn't matter how much time has gone by. This is somebody who chose to murder repeatedly.
Thank you, ma'am. We realize it's not easy to speak at these hearings. And unfortunately, we can't control how often the parole hearings are certified by the Department of Corrections. So.
Yeah, I understand that.
Okay. Well, we thank you for your statement. You may stay on the phone or you may hang up as you wish.
So thank you for, you know, for bringing this very, very sweetly in mind. So if, I don't believe there's any other direction for it, so Mr. Huffman, and I'm waiting, I'll make you glad to things. So it's okay, then I guess it's time for Ms. Officer Flores. Officer Flores, are you still there?
I am.
Okay, well, if somebody around the room might figure out where the parole officer is in Nevada, they don't shoot on the phone.
Yes.
Okay, so would you like to, first state your name, would you like to give us any information, or would you just want to open yourself up for questions?
Name is Parole Officer Mila Flores. I do want to say something that's really small. I do review the itinerary for Mr. Huff, and he has been seeking for employment. At every itinerary, he lists at least a couple of places where he has gone physically to ask for employment in person. So he is looking for employment. I couldn't tell you exactly why he hasn't been employed yet, but I do see effort on his part. Other than that, I am open for any questions.
Okay. You just found out that when you said that he's making an effort to find employment, the issue of a company that somebody that hires without a background check, I think the point was missed on that. I think their advocacy groups, but anyway, they were helping offenders get jobs, find companies that will hire them regardless of their background. And
yeah,
my understanding is when they go and they have to fill out questionnaires and they jump through some hoops, and once they've done that, they get the offender kind of like a certification. And with that certification, they can go to certain companies that don't do a separate background check. That's my understanding. So in other words, the advocacy group is kind of putting a seal of approval on this, on the offender, so it's a lot easier for them to find work and they put them together with an employer that will use that information.
Yes, and also I do employment verification where I call management to make sure that he has disclosed that he is on parole and that they know of his conviction. And he does have restrictions as to not working with anyone under the age of 18, so the employer is aware. So we do that on top of him. Wherever he finds employment, we do call and verify.
Okay. So is he does he stay pretty long his itinerary?
Yes, he does.
And with that accident happened, my manager was originally with that major violation that day, but has that accident itself really caused any problems with him being able to comply with his itinerary other than just having to change it because of physical therapy and stuff?
There was one instance where he did do what he said he was going to do on his itinerary. It's just a time were a little bit off, but he was addressed and we haven't had an issue ever since then. I am not sure if there was because of the accident or if there was any other particular reason, but it wasn't anything major and we caught it like right away. Because we do monitor him on his GPS and we check for his movement.
Okay. Another, I just want to make a point of clarification on my channel too. If I was 20 years younger, my mind would be more like a brain trap, but it's not. The issue about anger, it's a hard thing. It's very subjective when you start talking about when the last time somebody was angry. But I believe Mr. Rittenhouse's question was the last time they got angry and were able to control it. Not that he had, when did you get angry last time, but when did you get angry and couldn't control it? control them, because that was the basis of at least one of those, you know, murders, was he got down because of confrontation with an officer and he couldn't control them, and that's what he was reverting to.
Yes, I believe that was my understanding and his understanding as well. When was the last time that due to his anger, he basically unleashed, and that's why it's very present in his mind that it was a particular year. But, I mean, everyone has emotions every day, but I think that that's what he understood, and that's why I understood too from the question.
Right, that was the way I understood. Excuse the question and his answer. So, okay. If I don't have any questions for Officer Flores? Okay. Well, sir, Mr. Reed Huff?
Yes, sir.
Okay, you've heard all the conversation today and everything, and we're nearing the end of your hearing. Before we go into discussion and make a determination, we'd like you to give an opportunity to make a final statement against any other information you think might be pertinent to our decision, but we ask that you don't cover information that we've already discussed, okay?
Okay. First of all, I would like to thank the board for giving me this opportunity to be present here and give me an opportunity to hear all the things that were said today, because what was said is most important to me, because I take it all to the heart. And what I want to do is, from what I heard today, I'm going to use that to motivate me to do even more. And I know I have to do more. You know, and it's like, you know, I've listened to my brother, I've listened to the citizen statement, and there were a lot of things said that I could actually, you know, say, things to again. But it's not that type of interest for me. You know, what it must have to me is to show the board that I'm a relevant person. You know, I mean, despite the things that I've done 51 years ago, you know, I don't deny it, you know. But we're talking about a 68-year-old man now, a 67-year-old man, who was being at that time a 16-year-old kid, you know, just a whole lot different. It was some years ago. And what is going to for me now is, you know, despite what people think about me, as I said before earlier, that some people are not going to accept me regardless, you know, so I have to get into society to do that stuff to them, right? And I don't have nothing on my mind right now just to do whatever it takes to be right. And, you know, God is my witness. You know, if he's the only one that should have been listening to me, he's going to tell you the truth of my heart. And, you know, I've been some criticism about me, and I take that, you know, because, you know, everybody has a statement. You know, she has her statement. My brother has his statement. I got my statement. And, you know, we all, you know, use these statements, you know, to describe another person to me. That person has to be me. And what I want to do now is take those statements and take the criticism and try to import another program that I would need to make me even go further along the road. You know, there's come a point in time when I do want to go off the bank of mine, so I think that I've had enough for years, you know, and if you took it off the bank of mine off the day, you know, this is never going to change. You know, I'm going to stay in the same program with two guys that might be able to do the same program. Regardless of, you know, whether I set up time or not, you know, my whole when I got thrown 10 years back from the federal government 10 years ago, I never violated the first rule, not one time, right? And I still haven't violated the first rule. It's been 10 years ago, but since they formed it. And since the time you formed it in 2016, I have not violated the first rule. That is just one of the things that I'm keep carefully keeping myself close to the best. I want to be as perfect, I want to be as truthful, I want to be as honest to you, not just to you, but to people that supervise me. And that's all I need to do in life. And like I said, I don't criticize this. I don't have no criticism for this victim, but I have remorse. And if you're talking about remorse, yeah, I have remorse. I have so much remorse, I can't even explain, you know, and I just hope that you take that to heart, that I do have remorse for the victim. I don't sit here with a hard heart, saying that, you know, the heck with it. But no, that's not me. You know, maybe that's what they want to believe, they want you to believe, but they're going to kind of paint a picture to you of me, you know, and that people that they try to paint to you is that too. And, you know, if you were to sit with me 2 or 3 days after me, you would see that image of yourself and say, look at this picture that is being given to you, it's not right. And, you know, I think to you, you know, it's just something that's about to live with, and I'm not going to criticize. That's all I got to say.
All right, thank you, sir. The point of being under the discussion to make a determination, we'll be talking amongst ourselves, and I think we're addressing it, but we won't be. If we do have a question for you, we will specifically address you. But in the meantime, we ask that you remain silent, stay on the phone, we can hear everything that's going on, But we're ready for it, and when we make a decision, I'll be back with you to finish up here, okay? Mr. Hart, you understand that?
Absolutely, yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. The board's on this question. This is definitely an unfortunate situation. I was on the board back in 2015, so I don't know all the details about that situation, but I do know that the way Rob Stabler, the one party, was released on home arrest and without violation of his terms and conditions. Yeah. At this time, anyway, is legally entitled to be out of the prison walls, or as a home arrest, some cases still, and many things still, granted in the Department of Corrections. And so I'm glad to be able to come to the Mr. Williams is, I don't say deserving, but the situation is proper to grant Mr. Williams a order of parole and take him off home arrest. So, normally, home arrest, I don't like to spend too much time on the legal crime because the offender wouldn't have gone from the room for it, and it's been a time to be out of the walls of the prison. But this is one of those ones that we do have to go back, and we have to step back, and we have to really consider victims as well as society and be aware of everything that's going on. And I will say this, yeah, we're very horrific. And our one sentence was federal, one sentence was state because of a few feet of jurisdictional boundaries. Nevertheless, it's very, very serious. I don't know if you found the other one. And from previous history and found the whole thing. But on the side of victims, nothing more than that, nothing ever ends the memories. And everyone reads differently, so it's not fair to tell them that they need to move on, that they need to be over it, they need to do something. And as a victim, I've heard all sides of the neighborhood victims advocacy group, and we help people that are victims to move their lives on so that they are not stuck in one spot for the rest of their life, but you don't tend to get over, don't tell them to move on. But a point of interest is that at least I can remember 6 months, as long as the person's incarcerated and eligible for all the things, they don't want to rest. Every 6 months, there's no hearing. It's an automatic thing. And it's the law. It's what they're entitled to. And unfortunately, the victims, through all the horrific details of what happened to their loved ones. And the ironic part about that is the victims don't want to see any further release or lack of control of the inmate. But if he's granted ready to roll, there won't be any more hearings until he has to come back for actual discharge. And those 6 months here in the end, but they don't begin the tragedy. So now let's go back to Mr. Huffey. I do have a problem that he need to put in more effort to appear in person. I just really think that's kind of an important thing when you're trying to get off on the rest. I don't say he lacks remorse, but I'm not sure in this conversation that you can brought up as an afterthought. And yes, they were very terrible crimes. At 16, it was proven fact that his mind did not operate like a true adult at that time. But unfortunately, he grew up in prison, so he's going to have a hard time reintegrating. I do notice a lot of negation and liberation. In some ways, that's good because he moves too fast. He definitely will trip himself, and we see that a lot. So, actually, I'm sorry, just because I understand his brother's son too, and his family's got concern for his motivation as far as work and stuff goes, and Tom Lewis and those are the signs that are out there. Now, everyone does change. The time changes everybody. Everybody stays the same, it's not static. But everybody changes their way. Our job is for us to, we have to determine how much change and if that change goes in the right direction or not. But they don't have to worry the law, the offender, the victims, the particular crimes, the seriousness of it. But with all that said, and at this time, I just with a lot of different things here, and especially the employment and those issues, I am not comfortable with this contract with Mr. Duffy, ready for or absolutely discharged, but I am in favor of leaving him on home arrest. We'll have a discussion from my fellow board members.
I agree. I think that there are several issues that that have been raised. I think that we, as a board, we always take into consideration the victims. That's one of our responsibilities, and I think that this is something that the board does have concern. I am concerned, as one board member, for the lack of employment. I know it may not be his fault, but he really needs, as his brother indicated, that he needs some employment, and I think that that would be very helpful. I'm also concerned that he's behind in his fees. I think that this is something that's that he needs to work on, and he's indicated that he would work on the fees. And I'm also concerned that he has not had regular contact. And this is no, we can't control that, but he's not had regular contact with his brother or sisters in Phoenix. I know he's somewhere else in the state of Arizona, but for whatever reason, the ones in Phoenix, there's not been regular contact that's been indicated. And I think that he really needs to go back and get involved in some psychological training. That's my feeling as one board member, and I am not in favor of moving him off of home arrest at this time. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wayne. Okay, well, at this time, I'm going to make a motion.
Sir, Mr. Neal.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to follow up. Now, I just wanted to make sure that I understood this correctly, that he was a victim, and he was a victim of a bigger accident, and he chose not to inform his family, even though the possibility of neurological damage. Yes. I just find that poor judgment. And generally dismissive of his family's concerns, not unlike the sort of sense of dismissiveness about the original offenses. And I don't care how long ago they were. I don't think the death of two children is something that you can simply take the position, well, that was then, this is now. It was a heinous crime, and that dismissive attitude is disturbing to me. But I'll leave it at that. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Any other comments? Okay, with all the information we have, I am going to move to deny order for the last of the discharge, but continue on to the rest for Mr. Williams L. Cuff, AC number 32976. And before the date of the crime, we will be known 1 year set off. And that's my motion. And I'll cover the reasons after we vote.
Second.
Agree.
Motion by myself, second by Mr. Canales, agreed upon by Dr. Wright, Mr. Canales, and Ms. Moldenhouse. And the reasons would be it's a serious and violent offense on the human life, serious and deadly offense, trauma to the victim, age of the victim. Serious bodily injury, harm to victims, and I'm going to say you are in the courtroom, and I'm going to say that at this point in time, you should be on a regular counseling basis, because of the issue that not only from the crime, but 15 years in prison. And unless there's something else that the board would like to add, that would be all the reasons. Okay, Mr. Huff, Mr. Willie Huff, do you have any word about the discussion and the decision? Do you understand what the reasons are and...
Yes, I do.
What the decision was? Okay. Well, and I say thank you for appearing telephonically at your hearing. And we wish you best luck. Hope you heal up from your accident. Employment, you really need to get something that's permanent.
Okay.
And we wish you best of luck, and thank you for your hearing.
Thank you, too.
Thank you very much. This will end the hearing. And Mr. Alvarez, the coronis.